This 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's post-coup attempt purge has widened. Thousands of state education employees have been suspended. Thousands of others in government have been detained or fired on suspicion of having links to exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen. Ankara has accused the cleric, now in Pennsylvania, of orchestrating last Friday's failed coup. Ibrahim Kalin, spokesman for President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Tuesday, blamed a small Gulen-allied faction within the army for Friday's coup effort.
It was carried out by a small fraction within the Turkish army connected to the Gulenist group, criminal organization, a terrorist organization, a religious cult. All the initial evidence and the testimonies prove this without any hesitation. Of course, we will find out more about this as we get more details from the investigation and the testimonies, how many people were involved.
He said a formal extradition request for Gulen has been filed. In Washington, U.S. spokesman Mark Toner said documents have been received and are being studied.
I'm not in a position at this point in time to judge or to say specifically what those documents encompass or whether they constitute a formal extradition request. What I can say is, as we know, that there's a well-defined, well-established process that's in place that governs these types of interactions. We're looking at these documents now. We'll update you all as appropriate, whether if we determine that they are a formal extradition request.
Gulen has denied any involvement in last week's failed coup. In Mali, at least 17 soldiers were killed, dozens wounded in an early Tuesday attack by suspected Islamist gunmen on an army base in Nampala in central Mali. Two groups, the Messina Liberation Front with ties to Al-Qaeda, the National Alliance for the Protection of the Pool Identity and Restoration of Justice, claim responsibility. This is VOA News. Meeting at convention in Cleveland, Ohio Tuesday, the Republican Party formally nominated real estate businessman Donald Trump as its 2016 presidential candidate. The tally, read by House Speaker Paul Ryan, showed Trump receiving 1,725 delegates, far more than the 1,237 required.
The chair announces that Donald J. Trump, having received a majority of these votes, entitled to be cast at the convention, has been selected as the Republican Party nominee for President of the United States.
Indiana Governor Michael Pence was nominated as the Republican vice presidential candidate, Trump's running mate. Trump will face the presumptive Democratic nominee, former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, in the November 8 general election. The United States Tuesday confirmed North Korea had earlier launched 3 ballistic missiles on Monday. Josh Earnest is a White House spokesman.
The United States strongly condemn this and North Korea's other recent missile tests, all of which violate UN Security Council resolutions explicitly prohibiting North Korea's launches using ballistic missile technology.
Pyongyang Wednesday said the test, overseen personally by leader Kim Jong-un, was designed to simulate a nuclear strike on U.S. forces in South Korea. The UN Children's Agency has warned that tens of thousands of children in Nigeria are at risk of dying of malnutrition in areas affected by the Boko Haram insurgency. UNICEF has called on charities and donors to respond immediately to avert tragedy in Nigeria's northeast Borno state. A policy advisor for Doctors Without Borders attending the International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa, expressed doubt of global efforts to treat most people with HIV. Sharon Ann Lynch warned parts of Africa are being left out of the UN's ambitious goal of reaching 90% of those with HIV by 2020.
One-third of the treatment gap lives in Western Central Africa. So we cannot be blind anymore to what's happening in that region.
She said millions living with HIV in those regions don't get treatment. Meanwhile, a new global AIDS study said about 2.5 million people are infected with HIV annually. That's down from the peak of the year 1997, when more than 3 million new infections were recorded, mostly in Africa. New British Prime Minister Theresa May Wednesday heads to Berlin and Paris to begin the process of taking Britain out of the European Union. In her first foreign trip, Ms. May will meet German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President François Hollande Thursday. The International Monetary Fund has cut its 2-year global economic growth forecast due to uncertainty surrounding Britain's exit from the EU. The IMF said Tuesday global GDP, or gross domestic product, will grow 3.1% this year, 3.4% in 2017. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today's Wednesday, July 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S. Republican Party has formally chosen Donald Trump as its 2016 presidential candidate.
Mr. Trump was easily nominated by delegates from all states, and therefore he is now officially the Republican Party presidential nominee.
That's VOA's Vincent Mankori at the Republican Party convention in Cleveland. At the AIDS conference in South Africa, there's concern about criminalizing people with HIV. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe denounces the organizer of anti-government protests. And Joe Biden announces additional U.S. funding for hunger eradication efforts in Malawi.
The United States is proud to continue supporting the people of Malawi in their time of need. And we encourage others to step up and provide additional assistance to Malawi and the rest of the region, reeling from the impacts of this devastating drought.
That's Jill Biden, the wife of U.S. Vice President Joe Biden. Kenyan evacuees return home from South Sudan. IDPs at a UN camp in Juba say they don't have enough to eat, and sex workers call for decriminalization of their trade. Those stories, plus our listeners, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Republican Party has formally elected businessman Donald Trump as its 2016 presidential candidate on Tuesday, the second day of the party's national convention in Cleveland, Ohio. The delegates held a state-by-state vote, giving Trump the 1,237 votes needed to seal the nomination. He will now face the presumptive Democratic nominee and former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in the November 8th general election. On the line from Cleveland is VOA's Vincent Mankori. Good morning, Vincent.
Good morning, James.
Thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Donald Trump was formally nominated along with Indiana Governor Mike Pence. You are there at the convention in Cleveland. What was it like?
Mr. Trump was easily nominated by delegates from all states, and therefore he is now officially the Republican Party presidential nominee. And of course, everybody celebrating. Everybody was, just waiting for this moment because they didn't want anything to mess up with that nomination process.
I must say, watching the convention coverage on television here in Washington, it seems Mr. Trump still has a long way to go in terms of unifying the Republican Party. For example, while some of those who contested for the nomination during the primary are at the convention, others, like the governor of Ohio, John Kasich, and former Florida Senator Marco Rubio, are not there. Who do you know is there from the primaries that are supporting Mr. Trump?
Actually, from the primaries, they expect to have just two of those who fought bitterly against him in the process of getting nomination, and that will be Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey and then Ben Carson, the sergeant. Those are the only former rivals that are going to be here, and the other significant leaders from the Republican Party leadership in Congress are Paul Ryan, of course, the Speaker of the House, and there is Mitch McConnell. Other than that, it is missing of all the former presidential candidates from John McCain, of course, the immediate former presidential candidate for the Republican Party is not attending, is not coming. So there is clearly a big assignment ahead for Mr. Trump to try and unify the party.
Of course, Vincent, the drama from Melania Trump's speech on Monday dominated the news cycle when striking similarities were discovered between her speech and that of Mrs. Michelle Obama's 2008 speech at the Democratic Convention. How is that playing out there?
Well, this has been the talk of the day. See, this was supposed to be the biggest moment for Mrs. Melania Trump. This was our introduction to the millions of Americans. It was our opportunity to humanize Mr. Trump. The speech was great, but because of that line that was plagiarized almost word for word, the rest of the speech, in fact, became overshadowed. And that line became the only talk of town, the only piece of analysis on television and radio on the streets of Cleveland. And so it's so unfortunate for her. Whoever did that, whether she put it in herself or somebody, you can say really, really messed up evening and a great moment on the American podium, because this was a great podium for her. This was really the very first time that she was giving a big speech in front of millions of Americans who are watching.
So, Vincent, what's on the schedule for today, Wednesday, at the convention?
What is significant throughout this week is that the party has included Mr. Trump's children throughout the week. So we're going to have one other child of Mr. Trump speaking at the convention on Wednesday evening. Of course, you know, Wednesday evening is the biggest day for the vice presidential nominee. So regardless of who else is going to be speaking that particular evening, the culmination of the day will be the introduction of the vice presidential candidate and his speech, which will, of course, now set the tone for the last day of the convention on Thursday, when Mr. Trump comes on stage to accept his nomination and give the big speech.
Vincent, thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, Jane.
That's VOA's Vincent Mankore at the Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. The wife of U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is in Malawi as part of a three-country Africa visit. On Tuesday, Jill Biden visited several areas in southern Malawi affected by a drought, where she announced more funding from the U.S. government. Lamech Masina accompanied Mrs. Biden and files this report from Blantyre.
Joe Biden only managed to visit two of the three areas she was scheduled to visit in southern Malawi. Her final visit to the Machinga district was cut short in Zomba City after Malawi University students, who are protesting a fee hike by government, blocked the road. This forced the Biden convoy to return to Blantyre. The Malawi government has since announced the indefinite closure of the university due to the security threat the protest is posing to the city. Earlier, Biden announced the United States has donated $20 million United States dollars in food assistance to support food insecure communities in Malawi through the World Food Program.
The announcement today brings the total United States assistance to $70 million since the start of the food crisis in October.
Southern Africa is experiencing a historical drought, and the Malawi government declared the situation a disaster in April. Biden said the United States will continue to support Malawi in all the challenges it is facing.
The United States is proud to continue supporting the people of Malawi in their time of need, and we encourage others to step up and provide additional assistance to Malawi and the rest of the region, reeling from the impacts of this devastating drought.
WFP Executive Director Etherine Cousin, who is also visiting Malawi, said the donation will play a big role in the school feeding program.
Partnering food with education, we're not just feeding stomachs, we're changing minds and providing real opportunity to ensure the positive future that every child deserves that these children in Malawi will now receive.
Emmanuel Fabiano is Malawi's Minister of Education.
Last year, we're worrying about 2.5 million people that were affected because of food shortage. This year, the number is 6.5 million. The United States of America has been our partner for a very long time, and it is particularly at this point when we need assistance most that we appreciate.
Joe Biden is expected to meet with Malawi's First Lady Gertrude Mutharika on Wednesday in the capital, Lilongwe, before going to her next stop in Niger. Lamech Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And today's Wednesday, July 20th. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. President Robert Mugabe on Tuesday launched a scathing attack on Pastor Evan Mawarere of the hashtag This Flag movement, who rose to prominence for criticizing the government and organizing crippling protests in Zimbabwe. President Mugabe even doubted that Pastor Mawarere was a minister of religion. Reporter Thomas Chiriparsi has more from Harare.
A Officiating at the burial of the former chief secretary to the president and cabinet, President Mugabe accused Pastor Ivan Mawarire of being foreign-sponsored.
If they don't like to live with us, let them go to those who are sponsoring them. You can't urge people to adopt violence, violent demonstrations as the way of life or the way of solving grievances. We will say no, forever no. Find another environment. If you are a pastor, I don't know if he's a man of religion. A man of religion, we would hope, would preach biblical peace.
Mawarire was arraigned before a Harare magistrate last week on charges of subverting a constitutionally elected government, but was set free after his lawyers convinced the court that the man of cloth was illegally brought before a Harare magistrate as he was not warned and cautioned on the charges that he was facing. Mr. Mugabe's scathing attack on Pastor Mawarire was criticized by some Harare residents like Worship Dumba, who said the president is running away from addressing issues affecting Zimbabweans.
One thing about President Mugabe is that he takes all Zimbabweans for fools who don't even know that they are hungry and they should say they are hungry. Because once they say they are hungry, according to President Mugabe, there will be a foreign hand behind it. So what I actually suggest to the president that you must sit down with all those people demonstrating, ask them what their real issues are, and they should actually solve them. Solve those issues, pay civil servants on time, deal with corrupt leaders, arrest corrupt people, whether they are ministers, they must actually go to jail.
Instead of attacking Pastor Mawarire and the church, some critics said Mr. Mugabe should listen to the concerns of the people who elected him instead of seeing them as enemies. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Legal activists say they are concerned about a growing trend that effectively criminalizes people with HIV in many countries, including the United States. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to lawyers at the International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa.
No known law makes it outright illegal to simply have HIV, but human rights lawyers say people with the virus are often treated as criminals. 72 nations have laws that specifically apply to people with HIV. Most of them concerning disclosure. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last year reported 24 U.S. states require people who know they are HIV positive to disclose their status to sexual partners, and that 25 states criminalize actions that have little chance of spreading the virus.
So all those laws are quite problematic in terms of the fact that they stigmatize people who are living with HIV. They put unnecessary burdens on people who are living with HIV.
That's Nairobi-based human rights lawyer Alan Maleche, who sat in a small private booth with other lawyers at the conference and dispensed free legal advice. Maleche says he is fighting a request from the president of Kenya for a public list of all children living with HIV, which lawyers argue is a gross privacy violation. He has also represented numerous tuberculosis patients jailed for not taking their medication.
And my worst horror story ever, an ongoing case before the High Court of Kenya, is doctors carrying out tubal ligation of women who are living with HIV without their consent because they believe that women living with HIV who are getting pregnant are putting their lives at a risk because their immune system would be suppressed. And so they then go ahead and carry out tubal ligation without their consent, a gross violation of human rights at the hands of healthcare workers who are supposed to safeguard the rights of women who are living with HIV.
In meetings before the main conference, advocacy group AIDS Free World championed the case of Ugandan nurse Rosemary Namubiru. Namubiru was sentenced to 3 years in prison after she was accidentally pricked by a needle, and the mother of the child she was treating accused her of reusing the needle on the patient. The young boy tested negative for HIV. Activist Paula Donovan of AIDS Free World says Namubiru is one of many HIV-positive people who have been unfairly prosecuted.
And this happens frequently with cases of criminalization of HIV, that with no transmission whatsoever. And even when there's no possibility of transmission, they are still being brought up in front of courts and charged with heinous crimes, even when there's no possibility that it could possibly cause the transmission of the disease.
Donovan says the law does not need to change, but everyone, regardless of their status, should be treated equally under the law. Anita Powell, VOA News, Durban, South Africa.
Poverty has tightened its grip on citizens in many poor countries, forcing many unemployed women to resort to prostitution in order to survive. But these women complain that criminalization of the sex trade has left them exposed to a lot of ills, including the danger of HIV infection. Some are now pushing for prostitution to be decriminalized and are presenting their case at the International AIDS Conference. Tuso Kumalo has the story from Durban.
Prostitution is known by many as the world's oldest profession. However, it continues to be regarded as immoral and illegal in most countries. This has prompted sex workers, activists, and lobby groups around the world to intensify their demand for an end to criminalization of their field. Many of them are attending this year's International AIDS Conference in Durban, where they argue that continued criminalization of sex work could be worsening the spread of HIV. Jules Kim, CEO of Scarlet Alliance, an Australian sex workers association, says lack of understanding of what they want has led to many governments and people to resist their call to decriminalize sex work.
I think a lot of people get confused because they think decriminalization means, oh, no regulation, and now everyone's going to start doing sex work and many criminals will start taking over. But actually, that's not the case. What happens is it's not seen as a crime, it's seen as work.
Cameron Cox is CEO of the Sex Workers Outreach Project in New South Wales, where prostitution has been decriminalized. He says the move has put sex workers in the forefront of fighting the spread of HIV and AIDS.
We can go to our health service and we can say what sort of work we do. We can get the appropriate sexual health testing for the type of work we do, and we don't have to worry about being arrested while we do it.
Kay Thewin, coordinator at the Asia Pacific Network of Sex Workers, says only one of the 38 countries in the Asia Pacific region has fully decriminalized prostitution. She says other countries should follow suit.
If they want to reduce HIV in their country, then they should think and they should consider sex work decriminalization. It protects the sex worker from the violence, the reducing the HIV.
African countries have also resisted the efforts by sex workers to get their work accepted. Kahleho Rasibize is an advocacy officer at Sisonke, a South African sex workers movement. He says criminalization of prostitution in his country has caused sex workers to suffer in silence at the hands of abusive police and clients. He is very clear about the dream world they are fighting for.
We want to see sex work as work in a way that the banks are able to say, because of you are a sex worker, we classify as a working type. Here we loan you money to purchase a car, home loans, you know, personal loans as workers.
Though he admits it is still a long journey before they reach their dream world, he says for now he is happy that at least this present world now knows what they want. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Durban.
Kenyans evacuated from South Sudan's capital arrived home in Nairobi on Tuesday. It is part of a mass exodus of foreigners evacuated from South Sudan after several days of heavy fighting earlier this month. Lenny Ruvaga has the story from Nairobi.
At exactly 1 p.m. East African time, around 100 Kenyan evacuees, mostly women and children, disembarked from a chartered flight at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport in the capital, Nairobi. The Kenyans had been airlifted from Juba as part of the Kenyan government's efforts to rescue citizens caught in the latest flare-up in the South Sudan conflict. Officials from Kenya's Foreign Affairs Office were on hand to receive the returnees, who lamented for those left behind. Monica Juma, the principal secretary of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, told reporters she was hopeful that a lasting solution would be found to the conflict in Africa's youngest country.
We are pleased that there is a calm in Juba today and that there is a commitment. Both sides have said that they are ready to re-engage with the implementation of the peace agreement. So a lot of work that is going on from the region. We are calling on the international community to support the regional position because the crisis in South Sudan is not a regional crisis. It's a threat to international peace. We only happen to be neighbors and therefore taking the disproportionate burden of the consequences.
The government began evacuating Kenyans last Thursday, and so far, 857 have been safely brought home. George Ochieng has been running an electrical business in Juba for the last 9 years. The recent flare-up caught him off guard. He says he left five of his colleagues in South Sudan.
I'm glad, but not that much because of our colleagues. Still, we will not sleep. Yes, we have been struggling there, but still we are. If you know your employee or your brother is back there, you can't sleep because at least we know what is going on there.
Businesswoman Claire Barraza went to Juba a year ago. When the skirmishes began, she was rescued by South Sudanese forces who took her to the airport. Hers is a story of gratitude.
As I was going to the house, I noticed people running. Then within a nick of time, I heard gunshots and everyone had to lie down. We have neighbors, South Sudanese, who are soldiers. They're the ones who helped us get to the airport. There are so many people who want to come home, but there are no planes. If it's your luck, you'll go. If it's not your luck, like right now, we've left so many people there. Home is always the best.
An unknown number of Kenyans are still stranded in South Sudan. The government has stated that this was the last evacuation run. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, July 20th.
This is Adamu Mohammed Jonga. From all indications, women are about to snatch the mantle of leadership from men. Germany and the United Kingdom are now under the control of women. United States of America is also on the way, with Hillary Clinton leading this struggle. This is clear that the world is about to be free from men who are proving unjust, destructive, dangerous, and blood drunkards. With women, the world will realize total human rights and total human justice. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us here in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A top Vatican envoy has urged both South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to peacefully end the wave of violence that gripped the capital Juba 4 days last week, leaving hundreds of people dead and thousands of others displaced from their homes. Cardinal Peter Kodo Turkson met with Kiir on Tuesday and delivered a message directly from Pope Francis. Kiir strongly opposes a proposal by the regional body, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGA, and the African Union to deploy regional troops to Juba. That's it for this Wednesday, July 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Bartis saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa.
Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Republican National Convention and what a Republican presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.